Thank you, Bill and Anna. We could all probably end the service now and be just as good, but alas, they say preaching is one of my job descriptions here. So we are continuing our series looking at the heroes of the faith, the women and men in the Bible who had a character trait or did something that is worth copying even today. Last week we heard how Noah was able to trust God even when he couldn't see God. And this week we are looking at Deborah. As we heard from Frank, Deborah was a judge over Israel way back in the Old Testament times. Although, you know, Frank, that was a song. So you've got a good voice. I thought you were going to sing the text this morning. Well, the text for Deborah, she takes place after the time of Moses. So they're out of Egypt. They're in the Promised Land. But before the time of David. So there is not a king yet in Israel. They are in the Promised Land, but they are not alone. There are still powerful Canaanite cities. Eventually, the Philistines come onto the scene. They are a technologically advanced group of seafarers who come in from the Mediterranean. And so at this time, the Israelites are very much divided into their 12 tribes. There's no formal process for uniting them whenever they need to be united. And every once in a while, during times of distress, either spiritually or physically or oftentimes both, God raises up a leader to unite the tribes. And Deborah is one of those unifying leaders. She has quite a few distinctions to her name. But speaking of names, we're gonna talk about one person's name. In the text I'm about to read that introduces her, we took the texts out of order today, so this happens before the victory song we heard earlier. It says, Deborah, a prophetess, wife of Lapidoth, judge over Israel. But the phrase, wife of Lapidoth, is a funny phrase. It could mean that, but literally it means woman of flames. And there's no real record of anyone else being named Lapidoth. So either she is Deborah, a prophetess, wife of Lapidoth, judge over Israel, or Deborah, a prophetess, woman of fire, judge over Israel. That's like Game of Thrones, right? That's a good title. And I kind of lean toward the woman of fire or fiery woman because this text introducing her is enumerating the things that she has done, the ways she is known. So I think that fits a little bit better. And as we hear in this text, she is not someone to be trifled with. So I kind of like her Game of Thrones name a little bit better. And in this text, the Israelites are under threat from their neighbors. And God gives Deborah a very specific plan for dealing with the threat. And so she summons a general named Barak, and she tells him what to do. And listen for Barak's response to God's plan. And also keep track of how Deborah keeps everyone united and focused. Judges chapter 4, starting with verse 4. At that time, Deborah, a prophetess, wife of Lapidoth, or woman of fire, was judging Israel. She used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the Israelites came up to her for judgment. She sent and summoned Barak, son of Abinoam, from Kedesh in Naphtali, and said to him, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you. Go take position at Mount Tabor, bringing 10,000 from the tribe of Naphtali and the tribe of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the Wadi Kishon with his chariots and his troops. And I will give him into your hand." But Barak said to her, "If you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go." And Deborah said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman." Then Deborah got up and went with Barak to Kadesh. Then Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day on which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. The Lord indeed is going out before you." So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 warriors following him, and the Lord threw Sisera and all his chariots and all his army into a panic before Barak. Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot, while Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Hirosheth Hagoyim. All the army of Sisera fell by the sword. No one was left. Now Sisera, who, if you've lost track, is the enemy general, Sisera had fled away on foot to the tent of Jael, wife of Heber the Kenite. For there was peace between King Jabin of Hazor and the clan of Heber the Kenite. Jael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, have no fear." So he turned aside and went into her tent, and she covered him with a rug. Then he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." So she opened a skin of milk, gave him a drink, and covered him. And he said to her, "Stand at the entrance to the tent, and if anybody comes and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' say no." But Jael, wife of Heber, took a tent peg, took a hammer in her hand, went softly to him, and drove the tent peg into his temple until it went into the ground. He was lying fast asleep from weariness, and he died. More Game of Thrones going on here. And then as Barak came in pursuit of Sisera, Jael went out to meet him and said to him, "Come, and I will show you the man whom you are seeking." So he went to her tent, and there was Sisera lying dead with the tent peg in his temple. This is the word of the Lord. So thanks be to God. You didn't know the Old Testament was so R-rated, did you? And I'm curious today, who here before today had heard of Deborah from the Bible? Got a few. Who here knew her story? Even less, you get free food after church at the hospitality table as your reward. Thank you. It's curious to me how little we actually hear about Deborah, because there's actually a lot to like in her story. If you are looking for people with character traits or actions that are worth copying, like we're doing in this sermon series, she's got plenty of both. In the whole book of Judges, she is really the most godly of all of the judges that God raises up. She never departs from God. She never takes matters into her own hands. She just sticks close to God and gets others to do the same. She is the only person in the book of Judges that is called a prophet. So she was also known for hearing the truth from God and then sharing that truth with others. She is also the only person in the book of Judges who actually functioned with a judicial function, like we picture a judge today settling cases. She's the only one who actually did that. So she was valued and sought out for her wisdom, for her fairness, for her justice. In our text today, in the song that she sings, she is also referred to as the mother of Israel. This is a reference to how frequently people were helped, consistently helped by her ministry. And as she did all these things, she didn't lord it over other people like the Canaanite kings. She didn't abuse her position of power like we know King David did later on. She didn't get mad and break a promise with God like Moses did earlier. She didn't use her position to enrich herself and her family like Solomon did later. Deborah, like picture like Mother Teresa getting elected as the leader of a country. Like that's kind of what Deborah is like. So if you are looking for a character from the Bible to emulate and you're intimidated by Jesus, go back to Judges 4 and 5 and take a look at Deborah. It's hard to get much better than her. In fact, she was so well respected. Did you notice how the Israelite general, Barak, how did he respond? He says, "If you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go, I will not go." In other words, and remember how Deborah starts this whole thing off, is, you know, the Lord, the God of Israel, commands you. So she didn't like soft play this. You know, like this is directly from God, says Barak, but he's doubting it. Barak is more confident in Deborah's presence than he is in God's promise. Now that's his own issue he might need to work through, but it does tell you how respected Deborah was at that time. But you may wonder, like Barak's a general, right? So why is he nervous about this battle plan, from even if it's coming directly from the lips of God? Well, he has good reason to be nervous. To put this in a modern context, I'm going to let you pick between two different armies. You can pick which one you are going to go into battle with. So Army 1, you have a battalion of the most advanced battle tanks in the world. They are the crews are well-trained, the tanks are well-armed, the armor is thick, the engines are powerful and fast. That's Army number 1. On the other side, Army number 2, you've got a group of infantry. Nothing special about them. They have no heavy weapons, no rocket launchers, nothing to penetrate the armor of the tanks, no jeeps, no armor personnel carriers, no attack helicopters, just boots on the ground. That's your second army. Which one will you ride into battle with? In case you're wondering, you should take the tanks every single time. And by the way, this battle is going to take place on a nice flat plain where the tanks can do whatever they want. So the enemy general, Sisera, he had iron chariots. Those were the battle tanks of their day. And if you're going to fight against chariots and you only have infantry, there's only one place you want to do that, and that's up on a hill or on a mountain where the chariots have a hard time moving around. And so Deborah tells Barak, God's plan is to, we're going to start up on the mountain. That sounds like a good plan. But then we're going to go off the mountain into the plain, the least advantageous position possible. This is like throwing a steak into a pack of wild dogs. It's going to be feeding time. And so to summarize, if you want to skip over all those Old Testament names, here's the summary of this text. Deborah says to Barak, God says you need to take your troops and fight in a place where normally you would be slaughtered. Barak, that's a bad idea. But if you're willing to risk your life on it, I guess I'll trust you. Deborah, sure, but because you doubted God, God will give the glory and the victory to a woman instead of you. There's the summary of our text today. So have you ever known someone? You know, in this text, you know, Barak is willing to follow Deborah anywhere. Have you ever known someone that you would follow anywhere? Ever known someone who you trusted? Even if the plan seems strange or counterintuitive. If you've ever known anyone like that, what so inspired you to trust them like that? What was so worthwhile about their lives or about their decisions? Well, in this text, we can piece together what actually happened if you combine our text with the full version of the song that Deborah sings after the victory. What happens is the Israelites send their troops down into the plain, and sure enough, Sisera takes the bait. He sends his troops full speed into the fray, but God had sent a deluge of rain, and so that flat plain was actually a giant pool of very sticky mud. And those mobile chariots got stuck in the mud and couldn't move anywhere. And so instead of being fearsome battle tanks, they were sitting ducks. And the Israelites utterly destroyed Sisera's army because God sent them to the right place at the right time with the right kind of mud. But Deborah didn't tell Barak any of that. In fact, we don't even know if God told Deborah any of that. She just passed along the plan to the general and said, trust me and trust God. Now, Young Life, the ministry that works with largely high school students, tells leaders or students of many ages, tells their leaders they have to earn the right to be heard, that the students aren't just going to trust you because you've got a Young Life hat on or because you have a title. You have to earn their trust over time. And we see that Deborah has earned the right to be heard. She has earned trust from Barak and from the people. Who in your life has earned the right to be heard? Who has been a Deborah to you? Or are you a Deborah to anyone else? Who inspires you, but also who trusts you? Deborah was so trusted, so inspiring, that Jael broke a peace treaty when she killed the enemy general Sisera. She would rather trust Deborah's leadership then ensure her clan's peace with an enemy king, with a powerful king nearby. That's how trusted she was. As I think about people who've inspired me, before I went to seminary, I helped Michael start a new church in Austin. We were trying to reach those who had been burned by church before, so it was kind of slow going. We didn't just have to earn the right to be heard. We were starting with distrust from people based on their past experiences. But what drew me to Michael was how generous he was with his time. He and his wife met with me twice a week, not just to go over like the ministry plan, but also to help me form as a person and eventually as a pastor. When we met new people who were somewhat open to what we were doing, Michael was generous with his time with them as well. Some of them stuck around for the community and some of them didn't. But either way, he was generous with his time. To me, he was an inspiring example of a leader being for other people, not just for their own ministry's success. Is there anyone who has been generous with their time with you? And is there anyone who might benefit from some generosity of your time? Deborah was known as the mother of Israel because she was so generous with her time. As people sought her out to seek her wisdom, she was generous with her time. Another person who inspired me, when I was in seminary, I sought out a very specific internship at a very specific church. In fact, I ignored the very strong recommendations of the committee that oversaw my pastor training process so that I could specifically learn from Larry. I had encountered him enough times that I knew that he was the kind of person I wanted to learn from in my future ministry. And I still remember many of Larry's lessons. One of them was he had this habit of, as we were talking, he would draw pictures on the napkin. Usually we were out to lunch. He would draw pictures to illustrate it, but he would never label anything. And so I would go home with these scribbles with things circled on it, and I was like, what did we talk about? And so one lesson is now I label my drawings. So that's an important lesson. But two other things have shaped my ministry ever since my time with Larry. One is he told me there are four ways people can contribute to ministry usually, and you're usually only good at one or two of them. There are some people who have ideas. There are some people who are good pioneers or good at prototyping. There are people who are good at maintaining. And there are people who are good at transitioning ministries, either to wind them down or to start a new phase of life. And if you know where you can contribute well, then go there in the life of a ministry and then find other people to do the other things. And so I have plenty of ideas. I'm never at a shortage of any of those. And I'm pretty good at starting or pioneering or prototyping something. But when it gets to maintenance phase, I get bored. So that's the good time for me to hand off to a team of people to help maintain it. We did that with the pastor's breakfast, where I helped pioneer it, and then eventually now we have a team that takes it over. We're trying to do that with the movie night. We know what we're doing now. We have people who can set up, people who can serve snacks. We're just looking for someone when I can't be there to run the computer, then we'd have the whole team ready. Another lesson I remember from Larry was he had these meetings with the head of the deacons. And this deacon knew what was going on in the church. You know, she knew who was in the hospital, who was feeling lonely, who could use some meals, all the physical and spiritual care needs. She knew everything that was going on. Larry didn't. He took his cues and took his orders from her, not the other way around. Because he didn't have the same natural pastoral care instinct that the head of the deacons did. And he didn't have the same wiring, so he let her take the lead. And I'm actually wired very similarly to Larry, and so that's kind of how Carol and I function here. She knows everything that's going on. She's the one who knows all the spiritual and physical needs. I take my cues from her because she has a way better pastoral care instinct than I ever will. And so I should let her lead that instead of pretending, oh yeah, I've got the title, so I've got everything figured out. So do you know how God has designed you for ministry? Do you know how to use your spiritual gifts and also to let others lead where they are better designed for the task than you? In our text today, notice that Deborah is great at many, many, many things, but she still relied on Barak to actually lead the troops in the battle. She gave him God's plan. She gave the speech at the beginning to help inspire the troops, but once the battle was joined, she let Barak actually lead them as the general. Another group of people who inspired me, when I was growing up, my parents owned an executive suites business where they had like 60 offices and leased them to companies. And they provided like receptionists and like a typing pool back when that was a thing, and office equipment back before everyone had their own. And as I watched my parents and the other businesses who were there, I figured out there's basically two kinds of leaders. There's one set of leaders who saw leadership as a responsibility, and another group of leaders who saw their positions as a right. And so the responsible leaders, like my parents, stepped in whenever there was a problem. If the receptionist didn't show up that day, guess who was on the phones? If there's a big spill on the carpet, they went looking for the cleaning supplies. The responsible leaders never said, oh, that's beneath me. The responsible leaders tried to solve problems so that other people could do their jobs better. That was one group of leaders. The other group of leaders, the rightful leaders, were usually my parents' least favorite tenants. Everything was someone else's fault. If something went wrong, they would never pitch in or help out if it was beneath their station. Their employees existed for their benefit, and it was the little people's job to make the big people's life easier. Those were the rightful leaders. And so as you hear that description, are you more like a responsible leader or a rightful leader? Are you pitching in to make other people's jobs easier, or are you demanding that other people pitch in to make your life easier? Are you giving credit to other people as a responsible leader, or demanding credit as a rightful leader? You know, Barak in our text might have thought that Deborah was being a rightful leader when she said that the Lord was going to deliver the enemy general Sisera into the hands of a woman. He probably thought she was talking about herself. But in fact, Deborah was waiting to give credit to Jael. But Jael wasn't the mother of Israel. Jael wasn't a prophetess. Jael wasn't the woman of fire. But in the song that Deborah sings in victory, Jael receives credit. And even though Barak doubted God's plan, when Deborah sings a song, she gives credit to what Barak did as well. She was a responsible leader, not a rightful one. Sisters and brothers, there's a lot to emulate when we read about Deborah. And so I encourage you to think about how Deborah inspired people with the total package of her life and her faith. She earned the right to be heard by being trustworthy. She always stayed close to God's will. She did that by remaining constantly in communication with God. She was generous with her time with others. She knew where to take lead herself and where she should let others lead. And she was a responsible leader who was willing to give credit to other people instead of demanding it for herself. She was inspiring. How much are you inspiring others with your life and with your faith? Amen.